So it delights me no end. And the only thing I have left to do now is to introduce April. I'm so glad you're here. Please speak to us.
Thank you, Jude. My name's April, and I'm an alcoholic. Today is a complex day for me. Today is my birthday. Today I turn 57, and that's not why we're here. But I got sober on my birthday, so that is part of my story. Today is 1 year in transition for me as well, as well as identifying as an alcoholic. I easily identify as an addict. There were some other drugs, but alcohol was my main go-to. And I intend to talk about addiction and my history, and I intend to talk about transition. Part of that's around the fact that this is being recorded and may help somebody else who's going through transition in the future. So it's my sharing is not for me primarily. It is to help others to create some identification in those areas, and sharing on my transition. It also gives insights into things that other people don't experience. That's something that I'm intending to do. I will say, or at least say, there are some trigger warnings. Some of them, self-harm, I suppose. That's part of my story, or at least thoughts of it. And that also extends to things like trauma. But I'll generally talk about, when I talk about those topics, I'll talk generally, not specifically. Way back when, I was born, and I'm not going to give you a blow by blow of every moment of my life, but the expression is a male as born, AMAB. And that's, come out of the womb and you go, yep, got some boy bits, so we're going to call this one a boy. And I suppose, considering where I am now, and was I, made female or born in the wrong body? I don't know. It's a little bit like alcoholism. Was I born an alcoholic or made one by the circumstances of my life? And again, I don't know, and I don't spend a lot of time navel gazing as to why I'm an alcoholic. I am. And I choose to treat it. And that's where I think it's important, once we realize we have a problem, to get on with a solution. And thankfully, there is a solution, whether that's in the form of traditional meetings of AA for people, or secular and other recovery spaces. To go beyond our addiction problems. I will say that there was some childhood trauma, occurred fairly young. there were sexual overtones, and it's not the sort of stuff that should happen to 4-year-olds. And I'm not alone, and I think that's important to acknowledge in experiencing trauma, whether it's of the same type. I heard at a meeting relatively recently that trauma is perhaps the biggest prediction of addiction in later life. Trauma might be a parent or significant other dying. It might be some childhood injury or something else that impacts them. As well as that early childhood trauma, which I consider a defining event. If there's such a thing, it was an emasculating event. And another version of to emasculate is to effeminate. And it changed the little boy. It changed the little boy in significant ways. Was perpetrated by somebody in a position of power, happened to be a woman. And it's taken me a long time to begin to address that. Irony. Wonderful experiences of being groomed by a school teacher, and who was also part of the church and probably doing things like the Sunday school. That was grooming. It didn't go beyond a certain point, and I know that person was eventually convicted of crimes against children. There were aspects of family violence in my home. Part of that I attribute to emotionally immature parents who didn't get much of an education. Maybe some elements of neglect. There were also sometimes, it's interesting. I identify one experience where I was being child-minded, and there was the opportunity to do dress-ups. I was able to dress up in some girls' clothes and felt safe. And again, is that part of why I am who I am? I don't know. But as I look back in my transition history, I do see some of those experiences. I had my first drink probably at 18 years of age. It was at a mate's place between school classes, and he produced something from his mother's liquor cabinet. It was something simple. I don't know if it was blackberry nip or Stones Green ginger wine or some fortified wine of some sort. It wasn't a lot. It was enough to give me a little bit of a buzz. We went off to class. The teacher asked me something, and I gave a smart aleck response, and everybody laughed. And there was that sense that I had arrived. And although I didn't get the opportunity to chase it early, I did chase it, particularly when I got away from home. I got the opportunity to go to university. My marks weren't terribly good. But nonetheless, my parents supported me in being able to do that. And I I would say the first drinking experiences at university were no invisible line in terms of addiction. One was drinking six cans of beer and projectile vomiting into a toilet and thinking that was easy. And another was blackout, waking up, hugging a toilet bowl. Another was blackout and waking up in the bottom of a shower. So it seems to me that there was no invisible line to cross. And perhaps I needed to learn to drink better. A little bit of faulty logic from the start. That university degree was a 3-year degree, but after a couple of years, they decided in their wisdom that our relationship should part. And so I was failed out of uni and I graduated to working in a hotel. That was a significant period in my drinking history because abnormal drinking was normal. One of the, alcoholics in the bar, if they fell off their bar stool, they'd help them up, and if they spilled their beer, perhaps get them another beer. And I'm aware that had somebody came along and said to me, "Hey, your drinking's not quite normal," it would have been as if they were talking Chinese to me, and I don't speak, understand Chinese. So I just would not have got what they were talking about. I got some significant responsibility and would go out to in a large bistro, seating a couple of hundred people, directing the other staff, ensuring events ran well. So my head was screwed on, but manager and I would often go to other restaurants and enjoy their food and enjoy 2, 3 bottles of wine at dinner. By that stage, I had a room in the hotel. Manager had a room in the hotel. There were nights that he wasn't there, and often, whether he was there or not, I would do my own little stock take. And when I say stock take, I mean, stealing, drinking, various things. And I know I had my favorites, and I know that in the, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years that I was there, he never came to me and said, "Hey, the levels of this liqueur are out significantly, and I know that's a favorite of yours." Never happened. So I was protected in my drinking in that space. It was somewhere around there that I started some night classes, and one of them was in Japanese, and I really enjoyed it. It was just something educational and interesting. I found it a lovely melodic and logical language, and decided to return to school. And there was some sort of program where you could, as a mature age student, go back to school. And I'm talking high school. I would have been 23, perhaps 22, and started Japanese at high school. There's a reason to mention this, and that is that that's where I met my wife. She was a bit younger than me, and although we eventually became boyfriend and girlfriend, it wasn't a sexual relationship. I was, quite aware that she was younger than me. But it says something to me in terms of perhaps I wasn't emotionally over, I wasn't particularly emotionally mature. And some years later, we got married. I actually went to Japan as part of the school program and took a bottle of Bundaberg rum. And if anyone's ever had the pleasure, it's got a particular taste. It was a present for my host father in a host stay. And he referred to it as medicine and like honorable medicine. Him and I got significantly drunk. I was a mature old enough to drink, so and I know that as the relationship with my girlfriend, who became my wife, increased, I was still drinking at the hotel and hid my drinking from her. She had some religious Christian conviction, and to an extent, I did grow up with a lot of Christian stuff. I will say, perhaps as early as 5 or 6 years old, a neighbor would take myself and my brother to church on a Sunday morning, and I struggle with the indoctrination we do of our children. That's a personal thing. Ostensibly, the neighbor taking myself and my brother to church was an opportunity for my parents to have some alone time. We would come home and my parents' bedroom would be closed, and well, there were no locks on the door, but they had something jammed under the door on the other side. So yeah, that was a beginning of a religious thing for me. My parents converted to Christianity. They hadn't grown up with it. And so I went through lots of that process. Didn't particularly think much of it at a time. I was a child. And it was only much later that I moved away from a Christian belief. And yeah, it's something that my wife had as a conviction, and I think I had been attending some religious services at that time. Eventually, she moved away from the smaller city, maybe 100,000 people at the time, to Melbourne, which is the capital of Victoria here. I followed her. I'd been working, amongst other things, in a poker machine room, for want of a better description, and would see people who were problem gambling, and felt that maybe I could help a little bit. I saw people who were spending much more than I knew that their income could likely be. Somebody who was working in a news agent, for example, and spending multiples of what their income was likely to be. And in that case, the relationship eventually broke down for that woman. I gathered that she was taking money out of the mortgage and hiding things from her husband and so on. And I hid my drinking from my soon-to-be wife. Went to Melbourne. Lived in various places, drank, hid my drinking, eventually moved to a place where we were going to live after we got married, and got married. Exciting. No alcohol at the wedding. Consistent with a lot of stuff that my ex-wife and I think she drove things in many ways. But when we moved in together, I hid my stash of alcohol. There'd be times when she was on the phone to her mother in the lounge room. I had the opportunity to return to study. And so I would often be studying in inverted commas and drinking at the same time and zipping over to the bathroom and cleaning my teeth. And she would say, you know, and I love this woman. I love this woman. She would say, "Hey, I'm going to bed. Are you coming?" "Oh, no, I've got more study to do." And that was potentially more drinking. And then I would potentially collapse into bed later on. She was studying. She eventually became a social worker and drug and alcohol counselor. And we never had a conversation about my drinking. We moved house and I found the place that we ended up living in, and one of the criteria for me, for myself, was proximity to a bottle shop, perhaps within 100 meters of where I lived. There was a bottle shop, and it I was still studying. I was working part-time, and hiding that drinking. I honestly don't know whether she was oblivious to it or she did see it and didn't question it. There'd be times that she would, having qualified for herself, be riding off to work on a bicycle. She was a mad bicyclist. There were years that she did 10,000 Ks on a bike. And I would start drinking early in the morning and then maybe do some study, maybe. But at other times, have a sleep, wake up in time for her to be able to return home. And then drink later in the evening. It was an ongoing thing for me. And I think by that stage it was daily. That was 2 to 3 years into the marriage, and around the 4 year mark, I'm thinking, actually, it was around that time that I got my first exposure to recovery meetings. A friend of mine said he was an alcoholic and wanted to go to a meeting. So he didn't have a car, and we went off to this meeting. And relatively small room, hearing other people's experiences, and in some ways identifying. The man who was in the chair asked me to share, and I was pretty clear that I wasn't an alcoholic, and mentally added, "Thank you very much," and mentally took 3 steps backwards. And I was sitting in the back row. There was a wall behind me, and I'm pretty clear now that I was in denial. I wasn't an alcoholic. I was in denial, despite the secret drinking at home, the frequent drinking. Eventually, my wife got wind of her senses and decided that the relationship wasn't working. There'd be times she'd ask me, you know, "What are you feeling?" And I thought alcohol was my friend, and I thought it was helping me cope with my emotions and feelings. But I'm clear now that it put a lid on my ability to deal with my emotions and feelings. And having asked me, what are you feeling? I would say to her, I'll tell you in a couple of hours. And I now know that that's called thinking, not feeling. And yeah, she needed to leave. And I understand completely that she needed to protect herself. And I will say that that is probably the loss of the marriage, and perhaps the hurt that I gave her is the only significant regret that I have as a function of my drinking at the time. I have said in the past, and I think my perspective has changed, that I would give both legs, my left arm, and one of my testicles to have turned that around. Now being in transition, there's, some different perspectives, but yeah. So, did I grieve appropriately? No. I had qualified in my university. I did a 3-year university degree over the period of 12 years, and I understand that's a consequence of my alcoholism. I eventually could admit to myself that I had a problem, and I'm thinking that was 2001. And I will say that 2001, 2002, 2003 are a blur to me. I would struggle to identify any events that occurred during that time. I drank with a friend who was my ex-wife's pool partner. I would often go over to her place on the weekend. She was a lesbian, and our relationship was only about alcohol. Well, not only about alcohol. There was some marijuana involved at that stage as well. And it didn't matter what time of the day we woke up, whether that was 11 a.m., 2 p.m., or 2 a.m. We would have a drink. If we took her dog for a walk, we would take alcohol with us, and that was a measure of taking the dog for a walk. My lesbian friend betrayed me. She went and did a detox. She got sober to an extent. And so that relationship came to an end. It wasn't an environment that she wanted drinking around, and I completely get it. I got the encouragement to go and talk to my own doctor, and that was probably early in 2004. And said, "Hey, doc, I'm an alcoholic." I'm feel fortunate that my doctor laid out the options. She talked about controlling my drinking, and mentally my hand went up for that. She talked about detox and rehab. And finally, she said, there's AA, and she said AA has a good success rate for people who stick at it. And I tried to control my drinking, went away. And had I been able to be honest about my drinking, I would have, perhaps gone to that second step of detox and rehab. But I returned to the doctor and went off to rehab. I was very put out that she made me make the telephone call, that she didn't do it on my behalf. And mentally, I was picturing holiday camp, swimming pools, tennis courts. I don't play tennis, by the way. It wasn't holiday camp, it was boot camp. And I got an education about the disease of alcoholism. And I was contemptuous. I was very fortunate that I wasn't thrown out of the rehab because of my attitude. They took us to meetings of AA and echoed my doctor's sentiments that AA has a good success rate for people who stick at it. And they encourage us to read a chapter of the big book up to chapter five each day so that we might get some understanding of the disease of alcoholism. And I got out of the rehab, got 40 days in conjunction with the rehab, and I went to meetings of AA. So I did have a degree of support, 40 days in drank and 50 odd days in drank and 60 odd days in drank. And I think all of those periods without alcohol help. I think I spent about 9 months trying to think my way out of being an alcoholic. I didn't want to have a problem, and I haven't met too many people in AA who are going, yeah, when I grow up, I want to be an alcoholic, and happily accept that. I eventually, day before my 37th birthday, and that is the 2nd of April, that the day before. I appreciate that a lot of you existing in the 2nd. It's the 3rd of April here in Melbourne. So it is my birthday, my anniversary, my transition. So 2nd of April, there was a bottle of vodka that I bought. And I know there were times that I didn't want to drink and I didn't want to drink. And then I'm coming back from the bottle shop and I'm saying to myself, whose hand is that and where did that bottle of scotch come from? So there was drinking against my will. There were people in my life prior to getting sober who knew I was drinking, and that included a boss of mine. She knew I was an alcoholic, and she was also somebody who helped me get time off to do the rehab. So I did get some help. And yeah, that bottle of vodka did not deliver. I think my tolerance had changed in some respects. I made some decisions under the influence of alcohol. And those decisions were to come back to AA yet again, to potentially stop rewriting the big book in my mind. I did have a problem with God even then. Yeah, maybe I'll talk more about that later. To not be the last person in the door, which used to be me, not be the first person out the door, which used to be me. Perhaps shake some hands and try and remember some names. To sit where I could hear. I had attended a meeting in the city of Melbourne, which was a huge meeting. Would easily sit 200 people, and I'd sit way up the back prior to getting sober and think that it was good enough to sit next to somebody else who was sober, and somehow by osmosis I would get sober. So I resolved to sit where I could hear. I remembered the boy who took the first drink, that warm, fuzzy effect. And I have a scientific mind, and there's a sense of the fact that the Earth had been turning on its axis and going around the sun, and the sun's going around the galaxy, and the galaxy's expanding. And it's a point in time and space that I chased and never really got. That warm, fuzzy effect was oblivion in the end. That's what I was drinking for blackout, pass out, or oblivion. So I resolved to act responsibly, and I did not know what being responsible was. I was fearful that one day I would drink myself to death, that one day I would lose the mental capacity to say, yeah, I want to stop. Being my birthday the next day, it was a great day to stop. I do not know if I drank past midnight. I suspect that I drank it all and quickly. But as a measure associated with not knowing if I drank past midnight, my birth time is 12:15 p.m. in the afternoon. And that's when I start my sobriety, 12:15 p.m., middle of the afternoon. It's not the norm, but is there any one of us who is the same, exactly the same? So I went to meetings. That was how it was. Turns out that the person who became my who chaired my first meeting was became my sponsor, and there was a little bit of tough love involved there. He would say to me, "Be up on the corner at 7 p.m. Meeting starts at 8. If you're not there, I'm just going to drive past. I know that you don't want to come tonight." And I would be up on the corner at 7 p.m. and was a bit resentful. You know, the meeting started at 8 o'clock, and I didn't realize it, but I got a meeting in the car, and I got a meeting before the meeting, and I got the meeting, and I got a, you know, a meeting after the meeting because he chose to stick around, and a bit more in the car, and that's how it went. I didn't have a car. My car had died as a function of my sobriety. Sorry, as a function of my drinking. When I drank, there were lots of other little consequences. My drinking took me to a degree of dereliction. When I finished the bottle or the cask, it went on the pile beside the couch. And after I did the rehab, I came home and I threw out 95 bottles and 75 casks. It's an indication of where drinking might take me to if I was to return to drinking. And so I sailed along in AA, and there were lots of things to, you know, clear up the wreckage of the past. I had lots of debt. I'd put money on my various bills, and eventually got a statement from one of my water bill, and it said 50 cents credit, do not pay. And that was a victory. It was a great victory. It wasn't exactly like winning the lottery, but it was nice. It was an indication I was turning things around. My sponsor and I had a very informal relationship. He used to do his drinking in hotels, and was How would I describe it? He did his own debt collection. You know, he went to prison for attempted murder after he got sober. And what attracted me to him is he was happy to be sober. And I was not the happiest of people. So our style of working the steps was quite conversational. I will say that some 7, 8 months into being sober, the idea of a drink did occur to me. And I was fortunate it was late at night, alcohol wasn't easily accessible, and I didn't drink. I know that prior to that stage, I'd discovered page 30 in the big book, and I'd read the first 5 or 6 paragraphs again and again to remind myself, that's right, I'm an alcoholic and I can't drink. And life went on, you know, I went to traditional meetings. Fortunately for us as alcoholics, COVID hit. Now, not fortunate for a whole bunch of people who got sick and died, but it changed the face of recovery. People scrambled to find online alternatives. Grateful that I live in an age where such alternatives exist. And I was able to attend meetings. It was 2024, sometime in March, coming up on my 19th year, that I woke up as if I'd been hit in the face by a cold fish. It was, oh my God, I'm trans. And this was quite confronting to me. I didn't know where this thought came from. It was as if I put the puzzle pieces together in my life. I can see times when, I wish I'd been more woman. Times end of a high school event where a lot of the boys dressed up as girls, and I was accepted and did a bloody good job of it. And similar situations at university and throughout my drinking, that there were ups and downs. There were a couple of times when I where self-harm occurred to me, and I went off to the doctor and I said, "Hey, doc, guess what my head's telling me? That I want to kill myself." So went and saw a psychologist in those instances, and in one instance I was put on a medication, and at some point that was doubled and doubled again and led to some suicidal thoughts, and eventually I worked it out. We're talking around 2014, and something that followed on, and it is, I think, one of the symptoms related to it, was face hair plucking. And I mentioned that for a specific reason. Prior to transition, probably 18 months before that, I started growing my hair. For reasons that just, had no implication. And it was only after transition that I realized that maybe some of that hair plucking was discomfort about not feeling myself. So it's, I wake up, I think, oh my God, I'm trans. What am I going to do about it? I've been away from my family 35 plus years. I have no family in Melbourne. Nearest family is 200 miles away. At that stage, I was 55, going on 56, thinking, who am I trying to impress? What am I going to do about these thoughts? So I had attended some meetings of a AANA transgender support group, and I attended as an ally, I think, initially for, of a friend. And then I think I was in the questioning space. And then I wasn't. And I went off to a doctor and asked for hormones. And theoretically, all the doctors here can do hormones, but she said, "Oh, we don't do that here," and sent me to another doctor who went, I don't know why she sent you to me. I don't do that. Go and see this other doctor. And this other doctor was a non-binary person. And within a couple of weeks, I'd started on hormones. So that's been 11 and a half months now. And we're talking about estrogen and progesterone and things like that. Things that, when I relate to my transition, and not everybody who transitions takes hormones, I relate to it as a body fat redistribution. That's really what it is. Some of your gut fat moves a little bit, some, Hips and bum will come, breasts grow, my lips change slightly, facial change is, will flesh out a little bit, voice will not change. And that journey, I have in the past described getting sober as the hardest thing I've ever done, but I do now currently consider transitioning the hardest thing I've ever done. Going bra shopping for the first time, a couple of girlfriends took me to the fitting and, asked me if they wanted them to come in, and it's like, I don't know. And all right, and they came in, and I felt much less than. It wasn't as if we did comparisons, but I got the bra fitting from a lovely lady, and it began some of the mini stuff that I had to do to begin the transition. Rounded glasses, a simple thing. Having my girlfriends take me to get my nails done for the first time. I'm currently going green. Wearing dresses for the first time, and that was at a Halloween event for one of the members at her home. So it was a safe place with lots of members around. I now know that within about 2 to 3 weeks, I'd chosen April as a name. And there were little things along the way. One of the most important things is that I went to different kinds of meetings. When I transitioned, became a woman, I apparently became a lesbian at the same time because I still like women. Sexual preference doesn't necessarily change as a function of gender change. And I went to queer meetings. I went to some trans meetings, and they exist. I went to some secular meetings. It happened that there was a women's secular meeting that I stumbled into, which has been fantastic, and just a small community that's been a good support. And a lot of this stuff happened within the first month or so, and I have done a lot of meetings since transition. I eventually found secular meetings, and began to attend those as well. I have had experiences where I found some of those meetings just a little bit too gaudy for me, and have moved away from them. And maybe it was that I got that queer identification, for example, and went, okay, yep, I understand this. I'm going to move on. It's part of my growth. Some 6 months in, I got a resentment. At 6 o'clock, I was fine, got my resentment at seven, and then went into the bathroom and asked myself, should I pour the mouthwash down the sink? At 19 and a half years, I wanted to have a drink. And I did go to a meeting out of New York. There was an Australian member who I'd introduced to that meeting. They rang me, they talked me down from that, and it left me shaken and scattered. And for about 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, and eventually it occurred to me that if you can stay sober and clean today, I can do that as well. And that's what regrounded me. But it did encourage me to look at various aspects of my program. My sponsor had moved away 7 years ago, and I didn't have a sponsor. Eventually I met somebody. It turns out that whilst I was sleeping, she asked me to go through the steps with her. And I declared that in honesty, I was also looking at her to be my sponsor. And we agreed to mentor one another. She used a nice term that we would become stepsisters. And that was the beginning of a new relationship in sobriety. I've been through a lot of stuff in transition. I lost my anonymity when I went to a meeting. I went to a meeting out of New York, and this non-binary person talked about being able to bring their whole self to the meeting, being an alcoholic and being non-binary. They can pass as something else in the rest of their life. And that gave me the space to stop walking an androgynous line, telling a few people here and there to bring my whole self to life in terms of transition. Within a month, I'd come out in AA. I'd come out in my workplace. It stopped me having to be two different people. Oh, who is it I've told? Who is it I haven't told? To be able to pick up the phone and say, "Hi, this is April." So that was really freeing. But there was a sense of loss of anonymity to everybody who knew me. And then I feeling uncomfortable out in the community. So starting to wear a dress, carrying a handbag, having changed my appearance, working on getting my legal identity changed. Lots and lots of things, some transphobia, a mechanic who didn't like the color of my nails and asked me if I was a woman. And yeah, it has been, yeah. And I said, "Yeah, I am." And he told me to grow some balls and be a man. And I told him I had some. And in this, he basically said, "Go away. We don't want your business anymore." And that's fine. I rang a member who's in this meeting or was in this meeting, and spoke to them. And because I didn't want my serenity destroyed. And I got a new mechanic the same day. I appreciate time's passing as well. There's many experiences I've had in AA where, as I moved more in the secular space, had some trouble with the Lord's Prayer and got thrown out of a meeting, unceremoniously. And I wasn't the only one. My relationship with my sponsor has been amazing. Things in my workplace have been fairly smooth, fairly. I got dead named, which is the process of being called your old name by a new employee who had no business knowing it. And I, got upset and was going to rail against the system and decided to involve HR, and they will do some retraining and so on. I still go to meetings and sometimes feel less than. I think if I join a women's meeting, I pass in a visual appearance. The outstanding thing for me is my voice at the moment. It feels wrong. In a year, I have gone from the position of, "Oh my God, I'm trans," to considering gender reassignment surgery. Considering it's not I'm going to get the operation tomorrow. It's none of that. It's struggling with feeling different, asking myself what's appropriate for me, and a lot of this stuff. When I came out to the woman I used to drink with, the lesbian woman, who by the way has followed a marijuana maintenance program or California sobriety on, some variation of that. She said to me, "April, do you think this might be the reason you used to drink?" And perhaps it is. I still go to some traditional meetings, but I've started a meeting at Tusnua in the secular space. So that's a transgender, intersex, non-binary, and women's group. Now, why is it a women's group? It's because it's been my experience that women's groups are far more supporting towards the trans community. I'm not sure why that is. I will say that I've had exceptional support from a number of people here at Tusnua. And some of it I don't understand. I don't understand a lot of the acceptance that I and love that I have been given. But I'm really grateful for it. There are people in this meeting who I've met in person. I've attended a particular trans meeting probably every week for the last year. What I have seen is people who are new to getting clean and sober and quite new to transitioning really, really struggle. I'm fortunate I had some time up, but it is my hope that by sharing my story, it might give the opportunity for others to realize that there are different ways to do it. And primarily not to pick up that first drink and or drug or other thing, you know, if it's a behavioral thing, if people are dealing with one day at a time. I could speak for longer, but I don't think I will. I want to thank you, Jude and Tosnua, for allowing me to ramble on for an hour. Thank you.